Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets. My name is Paul Hill, and I'm delighted again to be able to speak to CEO Jonathan Hunter and CFO Neil Pritchard of Alico, a leading build tech software developer for all things project management and the maintenance of property assets. So big welcome, gents.
Morning. Hi, Paul.
Well, big congrats on today's strong and better than expected 2025 results, with sales increasing 20% to £38.8 million. So maybe we could start there, Jonathan. I suppose you could just run the audience through what's been driving that really strong growth, which seemed to actually to pick up in the second half, despite the Chancellor's delayed budget. And then also just expand a bit on what you're seeing currently and whether the company has been sort of seeing any impacts at all from the Iranian war?
Yes, yeah. I think we're fortunate to have mission critical best of breed software. So, you know, that's been our focus, that's our core. And that critical nature of the software is allowing us to see healthy demand across the portfolio. You'll see that the software element is now 81%, so 81% recurring revenue, the balance being some one-off licenses and services. I think where we see customers delaying construction starts or putting off discretionary one-off spend, we're seeing that in the services and training. So that's a little bit lumpy, but overall, yeah, fantastic year in terms of growth of new customers, as well as a lot of expansion and upselling into the existing customer base. I think across the construction market, it's recovering, but it's unevenly recovering. We see infrastructure, utilities, public estates driving activity, while private housing remains still a bit sensitive. Across construction and manufacturing, I think there's a persistent sort of resourcing constraints. And that's accelerating the demand for software. It's also, you know, the real driver is improving productivity and predictability, but also safety, ensuring safety and risk management. So really seeing that digitalization still continuing, that's really supporting our growth opportunities as well. Geopolitical uncertainty, I think, may affect some of the timings. Especially with in terms of energy supply and demand in manufacturing, high intensive sort of, you know, manufacturing, but we're not seeing an impact yet. I think the demand for probably more so it drives demand for predictability and productivity. So yeah, I think we're very fortunate and excited about the sector we're in at the moment.
Brilliant. Well, that's very optimistic news. And then Neil, if you take us through the sort of the financials, because obviously you sort of like knocked the ball out of the park, top line and bottom line. So what actually was driving all the profit improvement and the cash?
Thanks, Paul. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, no, we're delighted with the numbers. Thank you. And yeah, team effort, of course. Great team that we have too. So as Jonathan mentioned, and you mentioned, yeah, the top line revenues up 20%. That does include a contribution from an acquired business towards the start of 2025. Irish-based business called PMAC. And so organically, that was 11%. As you know, we're the other side of a SaaS financial transition. And what's really pleasing is we continue to improve on some of those metrics as well. So total recurring revenues across the whole of the 12 months were ahead by 26% and to 31.3 million, which is fantastic. And that was actually an 18% organic growth rate. And then for the exit rate, the sort of normalized one for the end of the year going into the what is now financial year 26, that was actually ahead even a higher percentage, 29% as well, organically 21%. So we're really, really pleased with many of those metrics, as Jonathan said, 81% recurring. Obviously, we continue to see, you know, some challenges within the services side of things in the market. That's the one place we do see it. But obviously, we're a very high revenue recurring business, which is you know, fantastic and puts us in a very good sort of overall position. Leads to operating leverage at these sort of levels as well. So what we're seeing on some of the adjusted profitability numbers, some of the statutory numbers less so because of a one-off charge on a particular now disposed of subsidiary, but on the adjusted levels, really moving ahead now. So on adjusted EBITDA, 10.2 million, that's actually up 32%. Adjusted profit before tax up 35%, and adjusted basic EPS with some one-off sort of tax elements a little bit lower, but still 24% as well. So really, really pleased with that. If you add to that the fact that we have no debt, as you know, but also, you know, we're a high margin recurring revenue business, software business, very scalable, everything else, the free cash flow is up even better than we anticipated, really, up 30% to 8.2 million. And the cash itself at 16.3 million at the end of the year was up 16% year on year. But we did make that PMAC acquisition that I mentioned earlier. So had we not, for example, just done that, then our cash would have been up 49%. So really pleased with those. Thanks, Paul.
Brilliant. Okay, and then we just turn to the M&A, what's been happening more recently there, Jonathan. I know you bought Keyview, I think it was in January, and then obviously you've decided to dispose of Views. Don't suppose you could just quickly take investors through the sort of strategic rationale about sort of sharpening that portfolio up?
Yes, yeah, happy to. I think the strategic rationale for acquiring Keyview is quite straightforward. It's a proven project portfolio management solution. And it strengthens Alico's position higher up that decision stack at a portfolio executive level. So it complements our best outcome PM3 solution, but it allows us to sort of extend our reach into senior management and C-suite users, whereas, you know, traditionally we're really targeting those project managers and you know, task-driven folks implementing projects. So very complementary fit, slightly different go-to-market approach, as you can imagine, a shorter sales cycle with Keyview being at the high level decision maker, but also a lighter weight SaaS application that allows you to move into PM3. And some of the blue chip customers were really quite exciting to see as well, including London City Airport, Bentley and Virgin Atlantic. So we're pleased with the acquisition. We've been integrating the business so far it's going very well. We're pleased with that. In terms of Views, our divestment, I think, Views is a good business. Visualization technology for the interiors market. However, we concluded that it was non-core to Alico's long-term strategy. We're focused on mission-critical best-of-breed solutions for the built environment, managing and maintaining assets and projects, and not interior visualization or product marketing tools. So, the divestment really sharpens our focus, simplifies our portfolio, and allows us to allocate capital and resources to our higher priority building lifecycle software, as well as AI capabilities. And also allowing the Views business to continue on its own under, fully aligned owner that's, focused on that sector, on the interiors sector. I think probably just to, in terms of the business and the investment it required, our acquisition strategy was really focused around the building life cycle as well. So I think that's certainly, where we're investing and we see the most growth and have seen historically as well. So we're pleased that the business can continue and, our management can really focus on the growth areas of the business.
Yeah. Just on that M&A theme, Neil, you obviously mentioned you got £16 million of net cash, sort of 19p per share. What sort of like scale are you looking at for sort of acquisitions? Because you've traditionally done quite small sort of bolt-on deals. Is there anything perhaps sort of bigger in the pipeline that you can now sort of like have a look at, given you've obviously got a very, very strong balance sheet?
Potentially, yes. I mean, you obviously wouldn't expect me to sort of go through all the opportunities, but we continue to evaluate, many options and possibilities, potential targets. Obviously, dismiss many of them as well, of course. I think you're right, absolutely right. I think we've established a track record now in the bolt-ons, and I think we continue to see the opportunity for bolt-ons in to niche elements and bringing together elements of the business. But increasing, I suppose we are of a scale and an increasing scale that will certainly afford the ability, with greater firepower that we do have, to go for something that bit bigger. So so we're certainly not excluding those options, but of course they tend to be a little bit more scarce in nature the bigger you get, in that sense.
Okay, good. Well, let's move to the sort of the hottest tech topic in the planet at the moment, Jonathan. Let's go to agentic AI. Can you just talk us through how the company's currently using it, particularly in terms of its new product development sort of roadmap and what it's just recently done? And then also maybe touch on the sort of the potential with regards to charging structures for customers later on.
Yeah. I think when we talk about agentic AI, we're not talking about replacing human decision making. I think in terms of agentic AI, it's about continuously observing data, surfacing risks, and generating options and recommendations for people to action. So in construction and also manufacturing, asset heavy industries, the decision and distinction really matters. So ensuring accountability, governance around safety and trust are really fundamental. And I think that really provides Alico with an opportunity because, we're using AI to really support our customer base and their workflows and their capabilities, saving them time and adding value and reducing risk as well, or flagging, where risks are, so that experienced people can take actions. So really, I guess our AI strategy is around supporting the customers and the end users, the experts, not looking to replace people. I think across, I guess, beyond just the products, internally, agentic AI is helping us to accelerate innovation within the group. We see that what's really important for us, and we talk about a moat around defending against AI and competition, we're extremely well positioned given that we've got really feature rich best of breed products. So they've got business intelligence built into them, incorporated into them, and very difficult to replicate. So the surface level areas like UX, UI can be rewritten, but the core intelligence built into the products can't and will take more time than it's worth. So further to that and further towards protecting our IP, we're working on allowing access to that business intelligence through APIs, allowing other software vendors to integrate with the data, or allowing AI, agentic AI, to access the data. And I think that's, you know, really, really key going forwards. It fits with what customers also are demanding in terms of building ecosystems around different solution sets. And we've got some case studies. One, I think, was announced on LinkedIn, Acumine. They announced the partnership and they're using our API. Acumine do an AI insights dashboard around project data. So, you know, the core information, the core intelligence is still remains as our IP. And then in terms of how are we charging for that or what's the licensing pricing model, I think, you know, the core focus remains subscription-based ARR for us. AI capabilities provides, you know, more features, more stickiness, more ability to establish technology partners a lot quicker, allows us to demonstrate to customers prototypes or use AI as a consulting tool to help, you know, get ideas or solve customers' problems. I think in the future we will, I mean, we're looking at how do we charge for the value, and I think it comes down to ensuring that we are offering value. We are continually, you know, solving customers' problems and then, I guess, charging for it. We do have a combination as well with some of the APIs we're charging on a project basis, and that's been well received. But I think it just depends on how intense the compute power of the AI becomes. In terms of customer usage and then ensure that, you know, we probably would look to, in that scenario, look to a usage-based or maybe value-based pricing.
Yeah. So just let's take a real-life example. If I was a contractor and I was building a huge, great big property or an infrastructure piece, et cetera, and I used your software as a digital twin to do it or was a digital twin, it would be very, I mean, presumably there would be, you would be the best place to spin up new, you know, functionality, new features to help me better manage that particular product rather than a startup, because they couldn't get access to that digital twin, presumably. I mean, that's essentially one of the big economic moats, presumably. It's the data, that digital twin that nobody else as a startup is ever going to see. And so they can't possibly spin up sort of like really nice, efficient sort of like software, because they'd be having to, you know, hallucinate to create a digital twin.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. And absolutely need expertise to input to get, you know, expert output. So yeah, absolutely. We see a lot of, we're obviously experimenting a huge amount with AI and prototyping, and you do see a lot of hallucination if it's just drawing on, you know, not drawing on accurate information. Yeah. So it looks on the surface looks like it's generating a schedule and a project plan, but once you dig deeper, and someone who knows, you know, is experienced, will see that you know, it's got a lot of work or more work to do to be usable. So yeah. I think you know, we're really, I mean, we've just got a history of solving problems for customers. So we're not, whilst we can present, you know, generative scheduling and lots of really interesting looking applications, it really needs to add value and be of a high quality to sell as a product. And that's our focus.
Brilliant. Okay, well, let's move to the outlook for 2026 then, Neil. I suppose you could just take us through how you're seeing that in terms of, you know, you obviously had a brilliant 2025, good double-digit growth in just about every single metric. How are you going to see 2026?
I was about to joke something completely different then, but I think a continuation of the same, I think, in short. I mean, basically, we are... Look, as a business, I guess we continue to be a business fortunate with and planned with high recurring revenues, high retention rates, great cash generation, and loved by our customers, as Jonathan said. So solving their problems. So I think you know, all that provides a great underpin for the business going forward, and for revenue for the business as well, and kind of a certain you know, resilience. If you like, and a robust balance sheet and everything else for our investors as well. And of course, it's very uncertain times. So there is going to be a flight to quality. So I think we're well positioned for the future, and 2025 demonstrates that, you know, strong progress on our strategy. So, the board, we've increased the dividend, the final dividend, by the way, by 21% as well, which I think is another sort of signal and endorsement for the future in sort of progressive, sustainable policy. So we as a board are confident for 2026 in meeting market, you know, expectations and obviously for future growth beyond.
Great. And then just some final closing remarks, Jonathan, in terms of the year ahead for investors.
I think exciting year ahead for, well, certainly for us. And if you're, you know, following the story, hopefully you'll see quite a few changes this year. We're implementing a brand refresh. So if you follow some of our Alico Soft, customer facing products and businesses, they'll be operating or moving towards the Alico brand. And you'll see the products sort of logos all becoming aligned under the Alico family. So we can introduce those more easily to customers and hopefully, spark some cross sales conversations there. So simplifying the brand, one Alico and with products across the world. So that's quite exciting. And then some key dates. Hopefully, if you don't mind me plugging, but IMC next on the 5th of May. So that's at 2 p.m. if you want to dial in and see the presentation there. And then also the 12th of May, we've got, we're holding a tech demo at the Cavendish, our nominated advisors' offices. And then in June, if you're in London, Digital Construction Week, we've got a big presence there sponsoring Startup Village, and we've got a lot of products on show. So if you're interested and you'd like to see the technology, you're welcome to join some of those events.
Brilliant. Okay, well, that's an exciting future ahead. Thanks again, gents. Big congrats on the excellent results, and look forward in touching base for the rest of the year. So thanks again.
Thanks, Paul.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.